Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
That's Chucho Valdez, the noted composer, band leader, arranger, and pianist, with his Afro-Cuban Messengers band, and introducing us to Yanza. Well, of course, Chucho Valdez is a Grammy Award winner. He's been around in this field of music for almost 50 years and has been known as a pioneer, but also known as the son. This is really his main credential. He is the son of the legendary Cuban music icon and pianist, Bebo Valdez. This is from his all-acoustic 2010 album, Chucho's Steps, which won the Grammy for Best Latin Jazz Album the following year. One of eight he has won, as I said, in his career spanning 50 years. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eucharise Lead, and a program I know you would find of great interest today. Hillary Clinton made history last night with an official vote by the Democratic Party delegates and superdelegates. She won the nomination as the party's standard bearer for president in November's general election, the first woman to head a major party ticket. But news of a different, though very familiar, sort this morning, as Clinton finds herself at the center of yet another federal investigation. The IRS has launched a probe into the operations of the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, looking into massive fraud. We have learned here at Lead Stories. Several countries also have launched tandem investigations of the foundation's operations in their various jurisdictions. Most recently, you will recall on this program, we spoke about the fact that in the United States, Representative Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee requested that FBI Director James Comey, IRS Commissioner John Koskinen, and Federal Trade Commission Chairperson Edith Ramirez undertake a three-pronged investigation into what she called, quote, a lawless pay-to-play enterprise that has been operating under a cloak of philanthropy for years, unquote. The federal agency's probes should focus on the relationships between big money donors to the foundation and U.S. foreign policy decisions made during Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State, Blackburn said. Charles Ortel, a former Wall Street investor who exposed General Electric's multi-billion-dollar stock fraud in 2007-2008, since February last year has been examining the Clinton Foundation's global labyrinth of nonprofit subsidiaries. In an exclusive series he did with the program Lead Stories, yours truly, Ortel has charged that the Clinton Foundation is, quote, complete and total fraud, unquote. Ortel is here to discuss the IRS probe and its implications for the newly minted presidential nominee. And I thank you, Charles, for joining us once again. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, good. Well, this is a bombshell today. This is a major, major development. And first off, we have to talk about why it is not major news all over the airwaves. In fact, I learned of the story from the Daily Caller, which monitors Washington, D.C., and has taken a very keen interest in the Clinton Foundation today, actually broke the story. So tell us about why you think on this day, right after, on the heels of this history-making situation yesterday, that we have absolute or practically absolute silence on the fact that Hillary Clinton is officially a target, and along with the Clinton Foundation, a target for investigation today.
Well, yeah, I can't comment on why the IRS would have decided to do what it did on or around this date. All I can say is that I feel very good about the work that I've been doing, in that I have been making it my business. Indeed, you know, March 16th, 2015 was the first time I asked in writing, why isn't the IRS auditing the Clinton Foundation? So there's been a lot of time out there for people on both sides of the aisle to examine this issue. And what people don't yet understand, I myself didn't understand it when I first started looking at the Clinton Foundation, because I wasn't conversant enough with how public charities, that's what the Clinton Foundation is, how they operate and how they are forced to operate. On this broadcast, while we're talking, while your listeners are listening to this, the Clinton Foundation and its agents around the world are raising money on the basis of public documents that are in the public domain that anybody can look at, that are false and materially misleading. Representative Corinne Brown operated a much smaller slush fund, only $800,000 compared to billions and billions of dollars. She now faces 350 years in prison for doing what I believe the Clinton Foundation has been doing for far longer than Corinne Brown, with much bigger money. And it is very surprising. It's something, you know, when you first encounter these types of things, you really don't want to believe that smart people, and I will give the Clintons this, they are both smart, and Chelsea's smart, and people around the Clintons are smart, that smart people would get involved with something this bad. And we're not talking about, you know, running a gas station illegally. We are talking about running a charity. And in the United States of America, charities do excellent work, no matter whether they're progressive or conservative or whatever in their leaning, if they are politically, if they do have political leanings, which they really are not supposed to have. Charities do enormously valuable work, and it's work that cannot be measured in money. It's work that is enormously satisfying for those Americans of all persuasions who get involved with it. So for the former president of the United States and an aspiring president of the United States to get involved operating what I believe is a series of false front charities where there are no independent trustees, there's no financial audits that comply with the strict rules the IRS and state regulators do generally hold others to account for. No such controls here. There's every reason that corrupt people around the world might believe a president could be bought. There's every reason to suspect that there are cultures where people believe that, including portions of our culture. This is an entity that was set up purely and simply. It is crystal clear from the record. This was an entity set up to house the historical papers of Bill Clinton's presidency. That's what it was set up to do, and they didn't even do that right. When you go back into the early history, as I will now be laying out for people in excruciating detail, not 1 year of the period from inception, October 23, 1997, through December 31, 2004, not one single year was audited properly. They used accounting techniques that are not authorized inside the United States of America for an enterprise that was only supposed to be doing work inside the United States of America. Impossible to defend that. And the chief director of the Clinton Foundation in this time period was the chairman of the Democratic National Committee and the current sitting governor of Virginia, Terrence McAuliffe. So it is just indefensible that they, in addition to just doing it that way, they attempt on their website to hide this fact. They don't have the audits for those years up on their website. I found them in one of the many states where they have to register. So it's possible to find them if you dig. And when you see these audits, you see, if you have any expertise with accounting, as I have some, these are just boldly fraudulent. In this time frame, I suspect there was construction fraud. I think there were tens of millions of dollars diverted from this project. And I know that there was bank and wire fraud, that they borrowed money from three entities, illegally on the basis of false and materially misleading documents, and they attempted to cover that up. That's just going through 2004. Then starting in 2002, in the name of the Clinton Foundation, various and sundry people, Bill Clinton, a man called Ira Magaziner, and many others, went around the world to gullible people and suggested that this foundation was empowered to fight HIV/AIDS. It had no such capability. It had no such authority. And no one really knows what may have happened to the money that was taken from the hands of taxpayers and governments around the world, and from the Gates Foundation, people who should know better, from some other big foundations. No one really knows what happened to that money. And we are talking about a declared total amount of money sent to the Clinton Foundation, $2 plus billion. So it's not a small mess. It's a gigantic mess. And people have said to me already this morning, obviously people who know me have been contacting me and been cautioning, the IRS may just throw this under the rug and, never. That's not the way it works with charity fraud. The public filings of this foundation are already in the public domain. Anybody with training can look at them. And now around the world, I have been encouraging state governments and foreign governments and various donors to take a hard look at this. And people have been taking a hard look at this. And now as they take a harder and harder look at it, this thing is going to get exposed for what it is. And at a minimum now, what I would ask is that state governments, the IRS and others say, until this cloud has been examined thoroughly and professionally, the Clinton Foundation should not be allowed to raise one more penny of money. Not one penny until there are real controls, until there's a real auditing firm going in here to all of the Clinton entities, not just the one that's best known, the AIDS entity, the various health entities, all these strange-sounding initiatives, these joint ventures, every single one of them needs to be vacuumed and dry-cleaned and thoroughly looked at, not by some accounting firm in some small town in America that has no experience with international work. These are complex charities operating in many countries. Get a real crack team in here, and let's find out what really happened.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because we have discovered in the series that you've been doing here on Lead Stories that the Clinton Foundation is really many interlocking enterprises operating globally and soliciting all kinds of money in the names of these entities that were developed and that exist specifically to receive donations, very hefty donations, from governments and organizations and interests all over the world. How many entities actually comprise the Clinton Foundation? What we know is the Clinton Foundation being a labyrinth of other subsidiaries all over the world.
The actual answer is nobody knows. And here's why I answer it that way. If you set up a charity lawfully inside the United States of America that wants to operate internationally, you first pick a home state. Generally, you set up a corporation, what's called a nonprofit corporation, in a certain state. And then if you want to operate that nonprofit corporation in other U.S. states, you actually have to go through the formal process of registering that nonprofit corporation in each of the other states where you want to solicit and or operate. You also have to file a truthful application with the IRS that talks all about your past and all about your future intended activities. Unlike politics, you actually, in a charity, have to accomplish, you have to pick a specific purpose. You know, the fact that you are engaged in providing health care does not mean that you're a charity, because there are plenty of companies that engage in health care and are not charities. So the IRS normally is very careful and says, you know, what are your specific purposes? And then you lay them out. And now, why are you qualified to achieve these purposes? What makes you think you can do this? You have to lay all that stuff out. And if you lie in your application or you omit a material fact in your application, the stick that the IRS holds over you is they can go back to that application and they can say, you know, 15 years later, wait a minute, you didn't say you were going to fight HIV/AIDS. You didn't say you were going to do any international work. You didn't have any capabilities to do that. We're revoking your license retroactively to the date you started breaking from your original purpose. So that's just dealing now with the U.S. Internationally, in every country where you operate, there's really two things that you might do. You might solicit, or you might actually dispense charitable good works inside a country. So depending on the country, I mean, some countries are lawless, but most countries, and in particular most countries like America that were founded on the English legal tradition, actually have the benefit of a very wonderful set of laws that dates well back to before the English conquest, actually, even into Roman times, of how charities are supposed to behave. A charity is a special entity. When you create a charity, you're standing in the shoes of government, is the basic legal principle. And as you're standing in the shoes of government, you can't engage in illegal activities of any kind. You owe a duty as a trustee. You owe a duty, paramount duty, to this organization, this special entity you've created. You have a duty of care. You have to actually discharge as trustee. You have to understand what you're doing and take real pains to make sure. And then you have a duty, you know, a duty of loyalty to the organization first. If you have a conflict, personal conflict with the charity, you have to disclose it. You have to step aside from decision making. And these are normally duties that people take very seriously. And when the IRS, you know, there was that period, and who knows, maybe the IRS is doing what it should have done, maybe it was going overboard, but there was that period in 2010 where it is alleged the IRS went, let's just say they opened up a very aggressive set of investigations against certain types of nonprofit charities. So when the IRS wants to make an example of you, they can do that. So when you operate internationally, charities have special rules in the U.S. So the IRS normally is very suspicious of U.S. charities that want to operate internationally, because they could just be fronts for either laundering money abroad or having personal expenses being paid out of a charity. So the first rule for an international charity is you have to control your activities tightly from a U.S. base. You have to have records. You have to have board meetings. You have to make sure that monies spent abroad are kept track of in the local and then translated into the U.S. dollar. All that work has to be done properly. It has to be granular. It has to be available for the public to understand and regulators to understand. And different countries have different sets of rules about it. In countries like Russia and China, where there, you know, has been historical antagonism with the United States of America, those countries, in some cases, are very suspicious of our charities. And, you know, the penalties for breaking the law when it comes to charity fraud in China are extreme. Like many penalties in China, the penalty for charity fraud is, in fact, death. And so they take it kind of seriously over there. And I'm sorry to say that when I look through the records of the Clinton Foundation, they are guilty of charity fraud in China, starting in 2004.
Well, the interesting thing is that since 1997, technically, the Clinton Foundation has been in violation of its stated purpose for being. And the stated purpose was to establish a library and a research center, if you will, for pertaining to the presidency of Bill Clinton. Now, since 1997, this entity, which has yet to accomplish its primary mission, has instead just blossomed into a kind of a corporate behemoth. It's all over the world doing all kinds of things completely unconnected from the stated mission, which is to build a presidential library. We're hearing about universities, we're hearing about HIV/AIDS, we're hearing about a whole bunch of things which are drawing, these initiatives set up separately, are drawing a lot of donors, hefty sums of money being given. And now we have questions, the kinds of questions raised by Marsha Blackburn, the congresswoman from Tennessee, who's saying that essentially this is a lawless pay-to-play enterprise that has been operating under a cloak of philanthropy for years. So now we have in Congress itself a very clear suspicion that the Clinton Foundation is not only out of bounds, but it is engaging and continuing to engage in illegal activity. We also have other governments looking at the same thing, because it seems as if questions are now coming up with other governments that and other entities abroad that have been very generous to the Clinton Foundation for whatever reason. They're now beginning to examine, well, what is the relationship here between our donations and where this money ended up? We have no accounting for it. What do you know about this schism? The money is coming in, lots and lots of money, you say billions of dollars, but not yet properly accounted for. And you've been studying these records and books since February of last year.
Yeah, well, so the good news is, for those who want to get to the bottom of this, is that the rules actually, believe it or not, the labyrinthine rules that govern how charities operate around the world do make it possible for somebody like me. I'm just one person to go and study all these rules. I had time on my hands. And each donor, each charity that operates is required normally to list out all of the grants that they make and the purpose of those grants and the identities of the recipients of all of those grants in their annual filings. So by making educated guesses and following press releases, I was able to take, for example, the Gates Foundation, which is obviously a very large charity. They pride themselves on hopefully being well-run. The Gates Foundation has made numerous mistakes here. In 2005, the Gates Foundation declares that it made a $750,000 grant to the Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS Initiative, Inc., an entity that I don't believe ever was legally authorized to be a charity. In 2009, it lists out from memory seven different grants, detailed information, again, the bulk of it going to this HIV/AIDS operation up in Boston, which had its license to operate in Boston, involuntarily revoked on March 31st, 2008. So, you can go and you can look at what the Gates Foundation says in 2009 that it gave to the Clinton Foundation. Then you can go into the Clinton Foundation books in their what's called their Schedule B, which is on their website. They're required to list out the aggregate amount of incoming grants by donor of each donor that gave 2% or more in that year, and you look for around 20 million, and you don't find it in the 2009 books of the Clinton Foundation. That's the problem. Then you can go. Each charity is required to do that. Then, what I've been doing in the many months is contacting systematically government by government. So I contacted the government of Norway, and I said, I see here that you have various amounts you claim that you've given to the Clinton Foundation. Please give me a detailed list by year, by amount, in your currency, by date of each grant. And I have most of that. I don't have it yet by date, but I have it by year. So with that information, you can compare what Norway believes it sent to what the Clintons claim they received, and it doesn't square, and it's not a small difference. It's in the tens of millions of dollars less. In other words, the Clinton Foundation is declaring that it received many tens of millions of dollars less than Norway thinks it sent. The same is true of Australia. There's a story today. There's someone I met via this process who's a journalist in Australia. He's got a good piece up. He's compared what Australia claims it sent to the Clintons for various purposes and what the Clinton Foundation claims it received. And there, again, tens of millions of dollars of differences. And you can't attribute these differences purely to currency movements or to accounting treatments or whatever. There shouldn't be any differences here.
Well, there shouldn't be an operation in these countries either, because the Clinton Foundation is not authorized to do this kind of work in different countries. It was authorized under the laws of the United States to establish a presidential library and a research facility. That's it.
And that is crystal clear, Utrecht. That it, when you look, the thing that the Clintons have been trying to hide, there are many things they've been trying to hide. And when I say the Clintons, I mean the people around the Clintons. What you have to do, and this is an example of, you know, charities actually being regulated properly, when you operate outside your home state, you have to register in that state. Every time you register in a different U.S. state, you've got to explain to the state regulators, each of which has a slightly different approach to life, you know, what it is you're doing as of that date. And by meticulously going state by state, year by year through this, I have got multiple instances of false and materially misleading representations made on behalf of the Clinton Foundation to various state regulators. And the problem for this is that in some cases, I'm thinking right now of 1998 in New York and in Minnesota, you have false and materially misleading representations made in one case by a man who became dean of the Clinton School of Public Service, Skip Rutherford, and in another case, a former senator, David Pryor, who in 1998 was also chairman of the second legal expense reimbursement trust for the Clinton Foundation, and he did not disclose that, and the Clinton Foundation does not disclose that in their 1998 filings, which is wrong. You have to disclose that, and they didn't. And they also tried to claim that they didn't register in any states, when if you go to the states, you find the registration forms. And what do those forms show you? They show that in state after state and year after year, the Clinton Foundation trustees and their representatives made crystal clear on these state registration forms that they were to be a presidential archive and library. And that's it. And, it, you know, these state forms are tough. There are boxes where you have to check off if you're going to be international. They did not check that box. Federal forms, same way. Did not check it off. It's unambiguously true from the record that they were never authorized for these purposes. Now, if this were the Utrecht Lead or the Corinne Brown or the Charles Ortel Foundation, the IRS would retroactively revoke its charter and then reduce inequality, which the Clintons are fond of talking about, by forcing the Clinton Foundation to refile tax forms as if it were a corporation and then to pay corporate income taxes on it, and then to go back to major donors in the U.S. in particular and say, listen, the tax deduction that you took for a donation to this supposed charity that was not a charity, you have to give that money back with penalties and interest. That's what they would normally do. And in this case, that's what they should do.
Well, it's also larger than that, because we have the clear suspicion, and this is what Marsha Blackburn had expressed, a pay-to-play situation in which the foundation was a slush fund that also was acting as a lobbying firm and a consulting firm, and possibly utilized the connections of the Clintons, one as Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, and the other as former president of the United States, to get favors done for people who were able to be, exceptionally generous to the foundation with their donations. So we have a criminal enterprise operating here, potentially. And now this brings to the fore the question as to, well, number one, the investigation, the probe is officially opened into the Clinton Foundation. How is this likely to affect Hillary's candidacy as for president? And how is it likely to affect the operations of the Clinton Foundation generally?
Well, I'll take the second part of the question, if I may, first. And, you know, back in 2008, when the incoming Obama administration decided that they might want to have Hillary as Secretary of State and keep the Clinton Foundation operating, they tried to regularize this. And, you know, I think it's time for the mainstream press, and particularly the progressive press, to take a hard look at why it was, back in November of 2008, why did the powers that be decide that the legal mechanism that was to be used to regulate this conflict of interest would have no force in effect, that they set it up using what's called a memorandum of understanding, which any lawyer will explain has no validity whatsoever. There are no teeth in it. It's not legally binding. Why did they do it that way? And how come in the period from November 16th, 2008, there are two versions of the memorandum of understanding that you could find. One is available through an organization called Judicial Watch. I contacted them. They tell me that their version is the authentic version. It is dated November 16th, 2008. The second version is the one that was provided to Congress, and that Politico has, and that shows the same agreement with the same signature on December 16th, 2008. And the reason that's very significant is that the situation of the Clinton Foundation was dire on November 16th, 2008. They had learned months earlier that their prime organization had had its license to operate revoked. It was hemorrhaging money. It had not finished its audit. It was in violation of numerous state and international laws. So whether this agreement was signed on the 16th of November or the 16th of December is very material. You can look through a string of paperwork on the New York State Charity Bureau search website, which shows repeated lies under oath in this period. That the Clinton Foundation was lying, its agents were lying to regulators about the true state of the foundation in this period. Had that state been known, the Senate probably would not have confirmed Hillary Clinton. Because it's kind of a serious matter if you're a sitting senator from New York to be operating a foundation in New York fraudulently. So we need to go back over that period in some depth and ask ourselves, first of all, what was really going on? Why was all this paperwork wrong, badly wrong? Why were these false representations made? And then, you know, in this time period, I mean, we go back into, it's a long time ago now, it's almost 8 years ago, but these were historic moments. We could talk about Hillary being the historic first female. I think it was rather remarkable that Barack Obama had emerged and, you know, displaced the Clintons and now was about to be president of the United States. He and Valerie Jarrett and others around the Obama administration, incoming administration, could not possibly have known from the outside what the Clintons knew about their own foundation. So representations are made in this memorandum of understanding that are false. You know, that about the truce, everything's fine, all these great works. No, the thing was a hemorrhaging cash. It was illegally constructed and operated since inception. And it still hasn't filled out information concerning year-by-year government grants. Because when and as these numbers come forward, governments are going to be shocked to learn that money they think they sent to the good works around the world, A, couldn't be used for that purpose, and B, may have been diverted. So there's a lot of work to do to go back in over this period. And then you've got to ask yourself, you know, if the U.S. government could not regulate the Clinton Foundation when Hillary was merely Secretary of State, how in heck are they going to regulate the Clinton Foundation if she becomes president of the United States with final executive authority over the Department of Justice and other places? I mean, how can we have any confidence that this Clinton Foundation, based on the record that's known today, would ever be regulated properly going forward? So there's some big questions here. And finally, you know, on the email topic, you know, everyone's talking about the missing emails. The biggest thing I see that I wonder about is, you know, the Clinton Foundation in this time frame was dramatically reorganized, to put it charitably. New entities were created, others were merged out of existence, all sorts of representations were made. Many are false and materially misleading in the IRS applications. Why is there no email traffic on this? You would expect, you know, I know that if I had been the incoming Obama administration and several weeks ago people had told me this Clinton Foundation's great, we've got to keep it alive, and then I see the truth and I discover, my goodness, this is in, you know, gross fraud around the world. There would be emails flying all over the place saying, what do we do? What do we do? I don't see any emails on the subject. And as a guess, and I am just guessing, it might be an educated guess, I believe we're soon going to see emails on this subject. I believe there are thousands of emails relating to the Clinton Foundation that have been purposefully hidden from view because they're embarrassing, especially embarrassing to the Clinton Foundation, but they could be embarrassing to the Obama administration as well.
Well, that was kind of anticipating my next question, which is, this foundation isn't just in the hands of the Clintons. We have a governing board, and they are fiduciary agents of the foundation. So is it possible that we could see from members of the board at any given time, even from its inception in 1997 until now, that the IRS and other federal agencies looking into the Clinton Foundation and other governments now looking into the foundation, is it possible that we would see a kind of scampering or moves by the fiduciary agents of this foundation that would indicate that the stuff is really hitting the fan now?
Well, yeah, I think it certainly is. I mean, you know, I've got to believe, I don't know personally any member of any trustee of the foundation. I do know many people who are involved as trustees in foundations. And generally speaking, if you are somebody with any kind of net worth, financial net worth, and you get involved with a charity and you have a family lawyer, and that lawyer sits you down and explains your potential exposures when you get involved with charity fraud as a trustee, you think not twice, you think 500 times about whether you really want to be a trustee. And there are people associated with different affiliates here who are outstanding citizens who probably have not devoted or certainly have not devoted the time required to get to the bottom of this. And I'm hoping that and I won't name names, but I could, I won't. I'm hoping that some of these individuals who are very smart, who are attuned with the law, understand accounting reports, understand what I'm saying when I say that there are no valid financial audits of this of any part of the Clinton Foundation for any moment in time. When they think about that statement and consider that they are, in fact, trustees, that they have real state, federal, and foreign liabilities here, one or more of these people is going to say, you know what, enough of this pretense of an independent investigation. We're going to have serious people look at this and tear this thing apart from day one and make sure that this is done properly, if it can be done properly at this moment in time. In truth, you know, the Clinton Foundation did achieve its purpose in 2004 of delivering to the National Archives the right to use a portion of the Little Rock campus to forever investigate and study the period when Bill Clinton was president from 1993 to 2001. That purpose has already been achieved. The archives have a small endowment. The building is up and running. That purpose will continue no matter what happens to this thing going forward, because the archives are already in possession of the right to use the space. And they have, it's really our property, American property, the taxpayers' property, all that's there. As for these other ideas, you know, convening a fancy meeting around the world, calling it the Clinton Global Initiative, fighting HIV/AIDS with no controls, fighting climate change with no controls, all these other high-sounding initiatives that have no controls, no accounts, no metrics, no explanations, those should stop.
And, by the way, also having no authority to actually engage in this kind of work either. I mean, when they set up these kinds of initiatives, most of them, it would seem to me, require expert help. You know, somebody who or people who are recognized experts at delivering these services, but it doesn't seem as if that's the case. It seems as if these entities, once established, hell bent on one particular task, which was raising money to fund these initiatives, and we have no idea about what. You know, I've heard Hillary Clinton talk about the good that these things have done all over the world, especially the HIV thing, is the HIV project and how much good it has done. But what we see clearly is an aggressive effort to solicit funds all over the world. They're not at all entitled and not at all authorized to do any of this. And we have no accounting at all for the money.
Exactly.
How much money, in your view, You were the guy who brought GE down. You were able to show that GE was fraudulently overvaluing its stock by hundreds of billions of dollars. Is there a parallel here between GE and the Clinton Foundation from your experience?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say that the Clinton Foundation, in my mind, is actually a lot simpler than the GE case, because GE was far bigger and far more complicated. It's simpler from the standpoint that a charity, as I said earlier, you're not allowed as a charity to engage, quote, in any illegal activities. You're also not allowed as a charity to engage in purposes for which you're not authorized. You're just not allowed to do it. And it would seem they certainly did do this. So the size of this, because there are no controls, no one has ever stress tested from the inside and said, all right, here you say the donors are so many and it adds up to this money, but how come this $20 million the Gates people say they give you, you have 15 down? Well, where's the $5 million difference? How come Unitaid in Geneva, in the last time Hillary ran for president, 2007-08, how come they say they sent about another $100 million more towards the Clinton Foundation, and the Clinton Foundation declares it received? Well, please explain this discrepancy, and why has it remained like this for so many years? Nobody's done any of that. So to try to guess how much money is involved, the way I get to it is as follows. I start with the $2 billion that they've declared. Then I add in, there's another billion or so associated with the American India Foundation. And I say or so because that's the same problem. It was not set up properly. Its books and records are wrong. It's never been audited properly. So you don't really know, and you've got conflicting estimates of how much money was raised in theory to try to help the people of Gujarat, India, when there was an earthquake April 26, 2001. So we don't really know with that one. Call that a billion. In Haiti, and that's been getting some prominence recently, as it should, I mean, that's a diabolical situation. I mean, Haiti, I've never been there. I know, Yatrice, we have common friends, Dadi Sherry and others, Gilbert Messier, who are quite aware of the situation in Haiti. This is a place that it seems, you know, that the powers that be have just sort of decided to deal Haiti a deck of cards that just doesn't make any sense, unfortunately, for these great people. And, you know, here's an example where a former president, Bill Clinton, and others, while Barack Obama was president, with George W. Bush's, you know, good offices, got involved with Clinton, Bill playing the lead role, perhaps directing as much as $14 billion towards the unfortunate people of Haiti. Once again, no accounting. There's 14 plus 3 is 17. Then you get, there's a man who spent some time in prison, Rajat Gupta, who was worldwide chairman of McKinsey. He got involved with the Clintons. He got involved with the Gates Foundation. He was, in fact, very much involved with the Gates Foundation India project. And then he got installed as chairman of the Global Fund. And if you look up the Global Fund, sounds great on paper, another one of these things in Geneva, where, you know, it's a massive pool of money that's supposed to be directed towards the most unfortunate people in the world, dealing with HIV/AIDS and tuberculosis and malaria and other things. No controls, no granular metrics. And there, depending on how you count it, you're talking in the many tens of billions of dollars. There were very few estimates of what might have happened to that money. One that was done on a small sample size got you to a place where you felt that over half of the money likely was stolen in a small sample on a big piece of the Global Fund. So there's never been any rigorous accounting of that. Unitaid is another one. Unitaid's the biggest donor to the Clinton Foundation. Somehow the folks at Unitaid, who should know better, they include the former foreign minister of France, and the French people have given, you know, over $1 billion to Unitaid, a lot of which went to the Clinton Foundation. No one managed to check in the early period when Unitaid was formed and when the Clinton Foundation was operated. Nobody seems to have checked, either at the Clinton Foundation or at Unitaid, whether or not the HIV/AIDS fighting piece in Massachusetts was validly authorized, because it wasn't. Nonetheless, a lot of money, over $600 million, has been sent by Unitaid into the care of the Clinton Foundation. What happened to it? Nobody knows.
This is an amazing thing because, you know, you have this is not just a foundation. This is a foundation involving a former president of the United States who lends his name to it, a former secretary of state who has her name attached to it, and a presumptive president of the United States as well. So this is huge. This is huge. Do you think that the IRS and the Federal Trade Commission and the FBI in a Democratic administration that is just absolutely packed with party hacks, do you think that they're capable of doing a very good and thorough job that has at least it passes the smell test with regard to any political considerations and compromises here?
Well, that's a big question, but I would say that that you know, I actually do have confidence in the line people, the field agents. I have less confidence in the Federal Trade Commission because that really is easily subjected to political overtones. I have great confidence in the FBI. I have limited confidence in the IRS. But one of the reasons that I think that this is so important is that, you know, when we think about one place, if we're searching for a place in 2016 in this contentious period in American history, we're searching for one place where we can find common ground. Progressives, conservatives, liberals, whatever you want to call the different strands. I think we can all agree that only a fool would want to defend the notion that charity fraud is a good thing. Only a fool would try that. And that progressives and conservatives can agree that charity fraud is despicable. Operating as Robin Hood in reverse, going around taking credit for good deeds you've never done, taking in money and who knows what's really happening to it on a grand scale globally, is an embarrassment and disgrace to every fair-minded American in this country, living today, in the past, and in the future. It's disgraceful behavior. It's not something that we could just, you know, say it's a conspiracy theory or blame it on the Russians or whatever else. This is a charity. There weren't any significant, as far as I can tell, Republican operatives, you know, making it impossible for the Clinton Foundation to do what they needed to do. This was under the thumb of the Clinton wing of life. And so it is, you can't blame this mess on a video. You can't blame it on the Russians. You can only blame it on the people who are involved. And the Clintons need to fess up. If they're not going to come forward and explain what's going on here, we the people have to dig into this. And the good news is we don't have to find the missing emails. They've already filed their paperwork. All the errors are evident. People like me who spend their time and attention on this, you can look at the public record, see what I'm saying, see for yourself. You go on the Clinton Foundation website, you try to find their annual reports. You'll find garbled versions of them. So you go into the New York State Charity Bureau Register, punch in the numbers, the employer identification numbers for these charities. You will get the complete reports. You will see the discrepancies. You will see what the Clintons have been trying to hide. And, you know, the public clamor here is what I depend upon. People that come forward and say, you know what? I've had it with this. I've had it with people on the right and the left. I've had it with party hacks in both parties. You know, I know things aren't working properly. This is wrong. This is not something that there are too many problems here. We haven't talked about Lori at this time, but there are just too many problems, whether it's pay to play, the international activities. This is a textbook case in international charity fraud run by people who are trained as lawyers. These are not people who, you know, have no familiarity with the law. Bill Clinton taught law. Hillary Clinton is supposedly one of the smartest lawyers in the world, according to certain surveys. How could you miss this?
Is there a role for an independent or independent entities to play here in terms of safeguarding, if nothing else, the reputation of the charity world, the philanthropic world? Is there a role for them to play in any examination of the Clinton Foundation that may independently serve to add integrity to this investigation?
Well, I'm hoping, you know, that out of this will come a new regulatory regime. The answer to your question, Eutrice, is that there is no global regulator of charities. There just isn't one. There's no unified thinking on it. It's complicated. I mean, the bad news is we've been given a tool in the internet that is a very powerful and dangerous tool that allows people to get control of vast incoming streams of money where there's no identifying markers on that money. And if you operate a charity in this way, you're just asking to get involved in fraud. And the big, you know, what people don't want to think about here is that the biggest trick, I think, in financial terms in a fraud of this type is not the question of what you see in the books. It's what you don't see. It's how much money came towards this Clinton Foundation exercise that was never declared as having been received. And that so that you don't really know how much money. You do know from press reports that when natural disasters happen, the tsunami, Katrina, other things, billions of dollars come out of nowhere because, you know, there are a lot of people. There's 7 billion people on the planet. Let's say there are 3 billion adults. You know, a disaster strikes. You've got the internet. Small amounts of money from millions and tens of millions of people quickly add up. So there is no regulator. There should be a regulator. There should actually be this should be a joint exercise, a project of people around the world who've been told there's a Clinton Foundation in their country. Late last year, I was scanning the internet and I noticed a story that it struck me as odd that there was a raffle going on in the country of Gambia, famous for its, I think, beaches and peanuts, among other things. And it said that the winner of the raffle would get a chance to jog on the beach with Bill Clinton. And I thought to myself, you know, why would Bill Clinton be in Gambia between Christmas and New Year's? Well, the answer is there is no such charity in Gambia. It's a complete fraud. And, you know, that's the danger. You get prominent people in India. There are two or three versions of the Clinton Foundation in India. So you get scam artists who will do this. I mean, they do it in this country as well. They'll invent a supposed charity and figure that there's so many charities, nobody's ever going to check it. And, you know, this should be a textbook case. I was in contact, I'm now in contact with the government of Canada. I sent them several emails saying, you know, listen, I really need to get a detailed list of all of your grants to the Clinton Foundation. And they came back and sent me an official email yesterday saying, well, we only have this grant in, I think it was 2012-13, it's for 19 point some odd million dollars. And I had to send them back an email saying, would your answer change if you turned your attention to this public filing of the Canadian government, which says that you indeed made a different grant on June 2nd, 2010 to the William J. Clinton Foundation. I mean, you have this situation where branches of these governments don't really know how much money they may be giving away to people, and that's just ridiculous. In an era where there are deficits around the world, there's so much debt, there's so much trouble, how can we have these big governments not knowing how much money they may have given to political insiders who might be trying to perpetuate a political dynasty in the most powerful country on earth? How could you not know that?
Well, you had said early on in the series that the Clinton Foundation would make the Bernie Madoff debacle look like amateur hour. Are you still of that opinion?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, with Bernie Madoff, when you talk to people who know about managing money, well, there are various rules. If you're going to give money to an outsider to manage, one rule is you never give all of your money to an outsider. You never do that. So when you start seeing a story about, you know, here's this investment approach where sounds too good to be true and you could only get in, it's an exclusive club, like, your hackles should have gone up as an investor. And indeed, Harry Markopoulos spotted this. His hackles rightly went up. That was all about making a buck. And when you start talking about making an extra buck here, people get greedy. So in the Madoff case, you know, Bernie Madoff is probably, you know, I don't know if he's smiling exactly, but I mean, he's, you know, he just tried to pull the wool over everybody's eyes, and he found a whole bunch of greedy suckers, frankly, and they fell for it. Now, after the fact, the regulators did a good job in clawing back a large amount of money. That's, you know, that's in the for-profit world. And, you know, shame on people who operate that way in the for-profit world. This is the charity world This is so much worse. I mean, you know, to be taking advantage of people in a charitable guise is reprehensible conduct. You know, you just can't do that. You can't allow this type of behavior to go unpunished. And so, I have little confidence, frankly, that the federal government in the end will bring the type of charges that are required here and then convict people and let those sentences stand. Because President Obama does hold pardon power on any federal crime. On the other hand, President Obama cannot pardon state and foreign crimes. So I have a lot more confidence that listening to this radio broadcast somewhere in some state in this country and somewhere in some part of the earth, there's a regulator who's listening to this story and saying, you know what, I can't let this stand. This is not right. I have to make an example of this behavior, and I will. And fortunately, in our states, there are some states with law and order regulators in both parties. And internationally, there are governments who are going to listen into this, and they're going to think about this, and they're going to say, you know what, this is what we have to do here is we have to make this right. We have to use this, you know, out of pain can come some good. So the good that could come out of this, maybe there should be a global regulator of charities. Maybe it should be possible for global charitable ventures. Maybe it'd be helpful to have a global regulator. You go through a process and you instantly get approved throughout the world, saving a whole bunch of money in the process. And maybe you put in a series of penalties. And maybe you create incentives for people to expose this type of behavior. Because, you know, on balance, not-for-profit charitable activity, it's a great thing. People come together, they find noble purposes, they pursue them. It's not about making money, it's about doing right and doing good. That's a good thing. We should have a vibrant charitable sector around the world to compete with government, frankly. You know, a lot of charities do work that governments would spend much more money on and get it done poorly. So who wants to really stand up and be against charitable activity? I don't think many Americans are.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Charles Wortel, for being with us today, adding yet another chapter to this unfolding story about the Clinton Foundation. We learned today that there is an official investigation underway, and we will see where it goes. I'm sure you are going to keep tabs on this story as it unfolds. Thanks so much for being with us again today.
Thank you, Idris.
Thanks. That brings us to the end of our program. And we do this all the time. We stick to a story all the way through. This is a huge story, and we'll see where it goes. And it starts off with a person like Charles Wortel, who just decided, let me look at the books. And what do we find? We find all kinds of really bad stuff happening. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You want to stay tuned for that. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about the program. And as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.